Hey everybody, Ed Carbajal and Matt Hawkins here once again for Coast to Coast Combat Hour, brought to you by AllAccessMMA.com. Make sure you check out AllAccessMMA.com for all your mixed martial arts news and interviews. We didn't get to do UFC picks last week because we spoke with the mighty cutman Matt Marsden, so we're going to look back at that card to UFC 275. Which I'm kind of glad that it happened this way, Matt, because it was one of those cards that wasn't really vibing with the new UFC fan. And then once the event was over, it's people can't stop talking about it, including myself.
Yeah, I mean, it had a little bit of everything. And then you you kind of finish it off with, you never know when it's recent bias, but I have a hard time thinking of a better fight than what we watched in that main event. Now, while it was sloppy, I appreciate a little bit of sloppiness. It's what kind of made me love the original UFCs, you know, the back and forth. It wasn't like somebody just getting position and being able to dominate. And, you know, this was kind of an old school throwback fight in a sense for me, where guys made mistakes, but it was just two tough dudes fighting, you know, Glover and Prochazka just nonstop, just back and forth. And when somebody would make a stake, the other person would just drill the other guy. And I mean, historically for me, Lawler and McDonald is what I consider basically the greatest fight in UFC history. And I have a hard time, and I was at that one, watching this one on TV. It's right there. And if you go to, like, you know, that's the McDonald fight's a finish fight. You know, we talk about a lot of the great fights in history, the Shogun, Hendo, DC, or not DC, Jones and Gustafson. Those fights went to decisions. This was a rarity where you had like an all-time great fight that ended in a finish. Usually that doesn't happen. Usually we don't, I mean, unless you can start thinking of some, a lot of the all-time greats are, I would say three quarters of the all-time greats are always fights that generally go to decision because both people are going at it. To get a finish this late in a fight for the title, between the old guard and the new incoming kid on the block. And, I was blown away by it. I was a little bit disappointed to see Glover lose the belt. I don't know if it's the older man in me now or what, but, and he's kind of West Coast for me. He's one of those guys that I've always rooted for and was super stoked when he won the championship. So I hate to see him lose it, but there's not like if Yuri was fighting anybody else in the UFC, I would have been pulling for Yuri and jumping out of my seat when he got that win, you know, being a fan of Ryzen and watching him kind of come up through the ranks. So I don't know. I thought that fight itself was one of the greatest fights I've ever seen. And I just unexpected. I mean, I knew we were getting two tough warriors, but you never expect it to actually live up to what it could potentially live up to. And that one lived up to it till the last 24 seconds of the fight.
Yeah. I mean, it was definitely, definitely one of the best, light heavyweight title bouts I've seen in a while. Amazing, just amazing watching it all happen. Not for nothing. Shame on myself, cause, you know, like we kind of did a brief pick for the main event only last week when we had Matt on, and we all kind of said we wanted Glover to win, you know, based on just his the seniority and how much we've been watching him fight and fandom and OG and all that stuff. I wasn't expecting him to do as well as he did, and the fact that he beat Prochazka. I mean, he lost. Obviously, that last minute submission Prochazka got was, you know, out of that was the youth and stuff like that that helped him. You know, the being able to maybe have better cardio because he's younger and stuff like that. But it was still a straight out war. I wasn't expecting him to get lumped up and dragged and I mean, it was not the fight that anyone was expecting. I had money on Glover because he was already the underdog. But damn, I mean, not for nothing. If Glover's asking to up until today, asking for the rematch, which not for nothing. I feel like people were kind of just like, hey, Jiri Prochazka is going to win anyway. Now, if you book that again for a pay-per-view, like the rematch, you know, before the end of this year, that's probably going to do better than whatever numbers they did this past weekend. I mean, you know, ESPN Plus numbers that we never see, but whatever those numbers are, they're probably going to do better. You put that as a main event, that's a fight to watch. Now that's a fight to watch. You don't have to sell it too hard.
Yeah, no, I don't think you have to sell it at all. I think the odds would be interesting on a rematch. I don't know if those have been posted yet, but I imagine that they would be much closer. I also think that I would still probably lean towards Glover a little bit in a rematch, seeing that he was able to get the takedowns. You know, if we had we done picks, my picks would have basically been, you know, not my money pick, but like what I would have picked on the show was him to kind of take him down and probably submit him. Or that's kind of what I thought. That's what he's been doing to a lot of guys lately. And I wasn't so sure Jiří had the ground game to be able to hang with him. And, you know, he kind of didn't. He was really kind of controlled when he was on the ground. He was only able to take advantage of Jiří or of Glover mistakes, yeah, which allowed him to kind of get out of the position. So if I had a rematch again, I would probably lean Glover. If it happens soon, we start talking about a guy becoming 43, late 43, you know, then yeah, maybe things start changing a little bit. But right now with the momentum he has, even with the loss there, I think a rematch right now is, I think it would be good thing to do it sooner than later if you're going to do it. Yeah. There's no real good contenders at that division. I mean, I know there's Jan and some of these other guys, but I don't see how you couldn't want to watch a rematch of that fight.
No, especially after that. I mean, to close out, like you said, with that much time left and the way he got the choke, I mean, you know, even the Cormier and all those guys on commentary were like, you know, it's because of, you know, the damage and fatigue, you know, like, and they were both like damaged and fatigued. So it was definitely one guy pushing hard. Both of them were pushing hard to, I mean, they both really wanted it. I feel like we haven't seen that too much lately. You know,
I was going to say, like, can you remember the last fight where you thought that either guy was going to win like 10 times each? Yeah. I mean, from the starting bell of that fight till the chokeout at the end, it was like, Jiří's done. Glover's done.
Yeah.
You know, Jiří's done. Like, yeah, Glover's like, oh, wow. Like, Glover's going to knock him out. Well, he goes for a choke, and now Jiří's on top ground hitting him with, you know, hammers coming down. You're just going, what the hell is going on? And yeah, like I said, that's what I mean. I like where the athletes have become in MMA. I think it's great that they're professional athletes and they're able to train and stuff and properly, but there's something about that sloppy MMA, probably what kind of attracts me to BKFC a little bit, just because there's a little bit of sloppiness and a little bit of the unknown still. And that fight kind of had that in it, mm-hmm, that some of the older fights kind of did. This wasn't a GSP, you know, domination. This wasn't, you know, a super technical back and forth battle of two guys, you know, kind of worrying about getting knocked out. This was two guys who it was kill or be killed from the start of the fight to the very last second. And I can't talk much. I mean, I could keep talking forever about it.
Yeah.
It was one for the history books and
yeah.
I mean, just,
you know, yeah. I mean, like, awesome. For me, it's not this like I know you're calling it sloppy or whatever too, but there's also like, if you look at the poet, I mean, there is a poetry and you know, there is a poetic side. If you look at like even the boxing historians, when you look at the greatest boxing matches or the great, and you know, now with mixed martial arts, the greatest mixed martial arts fights, this is one of those fights that's like, you know, it's the reason they make movies like the Rocky movies and stuff like that. There was just so much drama in this fight that I personally was just like, again, I mean, Glover's story, you know, if he lost badly, you know, people would have been like, oh, okay, you know, nice, you know, he had the title and then now he could retire. But he didn't lose badly. I mean, he got caught with a submission towards the end. Lucky, it's almost like, I mean, if there's a such thing as a lucky sub, lucky punch type of deal, that's what that was. But the thing that was beautiful about it is when they spoke to him after, you know, he's like, did I move like I was too old to be in there? And Cormier was like, no. And he's like, all right, then I'm not retiring. And he's literally texting Helwani today on the MMA Hour when he's talking to Prochaska, like, when are we fighting again? What's my reunion? Like, it's definitely one of the things, I mean, that's got to book the rematch, put both fights in the UFC Hall of Fame, you know, a few years down the road.
Yeah, he was winning 3-1 yeah. on yeah. I believe all three cards, and maybe it was even on one, but he had the fight won had he survived 24 more seconds. So I mean, I can't think of a scenario where a guy who, if a guy wants a rematch, why he who you know how why he wouldn't get one. But yeah, just great. When I say sloppy, I mean it's more mm-hmm. like opportunities were allowed to the other fighter. So in a sense, the sloppiness, well, there was some sloppiness maybe to allow some openings, the Prochazka and Glover being able to take advantage of that to reverse positions and stuff is the opposite of sloppy. That's taking advantage of mm-hmm. you know, seeing the openings and being able to do that. So you know, the slop is not a knock. I mean, Rocky was sloppy. You know,
it's like,
yeah, it's drama.
There's something. It's ugly and it's beautiful at the same time. It's
exactly. They're not making a Rocky movie about Mayweather because he's good at defense.
You know what I mean.
Like, speaking of Mayweather, it looks like he's fighting in Rising again against Asakura. So
whatever.
That'll be another circus.
I think
act.
I forget some Blaine Henry or one of those guys that at My MMA News wrote a thing about his opponent. If you've never heard of his opponent, but I mean, it's. I'm tired of these box like it's another exhibition. It's going to be rules that favor him. He's likely going to win because he's going to toy with someone doing something that.
Oh, he's going to win because he's Floyd Mayweather and he's fighting a good fighter, a good MMA fighter.
Yeah.
But it's Mayweather. I mean, he's one of the greatest of all time.
Yeah,
it would be putting Fedor in an MMA match against some, you know, up and coming boxer.
Yeah.
You know, it's not. It's not the same. My only hope is that Asakura comes after him and he's willing just to get knocked out, but he doesn't play it like this is an exhibition and goes for the kill a little bit. And if he looks like a fool getting blasted, he looks like a fool getting blasted, but at least he doesn't kick back and allow it to dance around for eight rounds or whatever, like we saw with Mayweather and the Paul brother. Yeah, so that was the main event. Co-main event. Now we'll slide down the card backwards. Valentina Shevchenko, Talia Santos. I mean, I thought Santos clearly won the fight.
I almost didn't want to jump right to like a. We don't even have to go over the whole card because there's a lot of decisions on it. But there's, I mean, that's that fight. I don't know if it's a case of Shevchenko falling in love with her own hype or Santos just being severely underestimated, but they won a split decision. So usually that's very questionable. I was expecting Valentina to do what we all expected her to do. I mean, not for nothing. This card was really a roller coaster. Someone called it like a roller coaster of emotions or something. And one sort of like editorial takeaway piece that I saw the following Sunday or Monday. And I was like, man, that's a really good title because I mean, when you look at the main event, this fight, and then obviously the one we're going to get to next with Whaley and Joanna, it was really like overall, I mean, again, I know I say it a lot of times on here, but it always happens every time there's a card out there that people are shitting on early in the week. By the time it for first bell to last bell happens, something or a few fights happen that folks are like, man, we thought this was going to suck and look what it turned out to be.
Yeah. I mean, that's typical. It usually is not so much pay-per-view events. Mm-hmm. Pay-per-view events are usually, usually decent. This card, I mean, name wise, you know, the top three fights, like you said, you're not, you know, if you're the main event was a little bit of a, you know, the casual fan maybe wasn't their main event, but the other two fights certainly were.
What's funny is all those casuals that were probably knocking the main event, now they're all on board for a rematch.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's how it's supposed to work when people go out there and lay it on the line and gain fans and help the sport grow. I the co-main event was very, there wasn't a ton of action. It happens to almost seem like weekly, but I couldn't see how the heck Shevchenko could have won any of the first three rounds. And then you throw in there a headbutt and I kind of, you know, there's a part of me that is kind of in on this like whole, let's just not fake injuries. But if you're winning a fight, like after the fourth round, if I were her corner, I would have said, tell the doctor you can't see. Let's go to the cards. You're up 3-1. And maybe you're wrong and she loses that decision, but I would have been going, you're fighting the champ right now. You easily won two out of the first three rounds. Let's just say that. Unquestionably, you won two out of the first mm-hmm. three rounds. We just finished the fourth round. We're calling it here. Why am I going to put you out there and let her go hit you from the side of your body where you can't see from and pick up a round? I mean, again, that's not the fighting spirit, but there's a lot of money involved. And now, you know, you see what happens with the judges. You're like, well, what? I don't get it. But Shevchenko wins. It changes because, you know, before this fight, it was like, oh, she needs to fight Amanda Nunes or, you know, and now I'm going, well, what I just saw, Juliana Pena is kind of a bad matchup for her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if she can be taken down and controlled, maybe yeah. it was an off night, but if she can be taken,
I mean, it could be. They're in Singapore. You know, it was definitely.
Yes.
There was some weird reffing going on. I forget what couple of weird reffing incidents that even the commentary team mentioned. They were like, "Yo, what's up with these guys?" But you know, so there were some things that was definitely some weird. There's something in the air about that event, but it did make it a good event overall with all the strangeness and the ups and downs that came with it. And speaking of which, I mean, the fight that was kind of the main event. For anybody that's a fight fan that watched this card, Zhang Weili versus Joanna, I always mess up her last name, but Joanna, former champion, throwaway champion. I mean, she, you know, that fight, first round definitely delivered as far as the rest of their history goes with when they first fought. But the finish that we got was, you know, unbelievable, shocking. And then, obviously with Joanna, hanging up her gloves after that, which I completely caught me off guard. I mean, I just got to say, dude, that's a woman. Like, I remember her winning the title. It's crazy that Esparza is holding the title now, and that's who she won it from. That's just so deep and weird to me that that's a whole other conversation. But the fact that I watched her rise, you know, I watched her come up and fight and win the title and defend it, and then. Like all everything that happened with Nama Yunus and Weili and all the stuff in her career, I'm just like, when she said she was done, I was just, it made me feel old. Like, it's just crazy that this sport is ages probably faster than any other sport.
Yeah, I mean, it hasn't been the prettiest, you know. Last few years for her as far as picking up wins.
Yeah.
But like you said, you think about some of the earlier fights, you know, and then obviously even the loss to Weili in their first fight was one for the, you know, again, for the history books. I mean, I don't like to see her retire. I mean, my first thought was she's just going to go to BKFC because that's always kind of been like somewhat something that would kind of be in her wheelhouse.
Yeah.
Like, but I don't, no, it seems like she's got a great relationship with the UFC. So hopefully they give her some kind of, you know, now that COVID is.
It's around.
Moving on, but, you know, we're essentially moving on, you know, so the European, you know, circuit in a sense is kind of going to get back on. Let's make her an ambassador, send her there, do what you were doing with Tito, with Hughes and Liddell, before the sale. And let's treat your legends if they want to hang around and give them positions to make money. Don't make her go fight in BKFC to make some money. Don't make her go sign with PFL to try to win an easy million. Like, make their lives easy. They made, you know, these people made Dana White and, you know, I know the Fertittas aren't there anymore, but, you know, they make all these other owners now, you know, rich and make their life easy. Let's make these fighters' lives easy. You know, they put on shows. They made a ton of money for the ownership. You know, set them up. Don't you know, don't force them to have to go. Now, if she wants to go fight somewhere else, then that's on her. But if she really just wants to hang up the gloves, worry about the rest of things in life, and, you know, then offer her a job if you know. I mean, that's what I'd hope to see happen.
Yeah.
So, but getting back to the fight, I mean, Weili looked great. Yeah. I mean, there's not really anything you could say. She was kind of winning the fight from start to finish, then threw the spinning back fist / forearm. That you know, basically knocked out Joanna, causing the stoppage. You know, It's the whole you mentioned Carla and how it's come full circle, and
yeah,
you know, when you said that, the first thought that went through my head is like, well, I mean, that says a lot about Carla. You talk about somebody who lost her belt to somebody, you know, and then grinded through and fought, and you know, whether it was a boring fight
her way
or
back and
picking up a decision here or getting screwed out of a decision there, yeah. You know, fought her way back, grinded through it. And although the title fight is something that I really never want to reference again in my life, at least.
Yeah. Oh, really quick, just for, because this is goes for audio too. Scarred Music chiming in here on the YouTube channel. How can I join to discuss the fight? You just drop your comment where you drop this one, Scarred Music. I mean, we kind of set this up ahead of time, but we'll feature it on the video broadcast. If you want to drop any comments, we'll read them out so folks can hear it. But yeah, man, I didn't think about it. I'm kind of what you just said about Esparza. The thing about, I don't know if you saw, like she's already saying, like, when I've title fight's going to happen on my terms with, you know, wait, because it was supposed to be a contender fight. And I think she's doing that kind of to flex back at the UFC because of what they made her wait.
That's kind of the move, too.
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of the move. You get the belt, you hold on to it for a little while, you make some commercials, you collect some money.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a smart move. You don't. These people don't owe the UFC anything. Not these. She doesn't owe the UFC anything at this point. You know. I mean, they're her employer, but you know, she's done more than earn her money that she's made there. So she doesn't owe them a quick turnaround. I mean, she kind of owes the fans, maybe, in a sense, because that fight wasn't great. But but if you tell me that she's fighting Whaley.
You know what's funny
from now, like, it's not any different than if she's fighting in 3 months.
Yeah. So I always try to look for positive and bad stuff happening. And I mean, or sad things happening, however you want to phrase it. But one of the things about Joanna removing herself from that whole, cause it's always in the first draw way. It's always like her, Whaley, Rose, we got Esparza there now. And something that Marina Rodriguez told James Lynch a few months ago, like it's always the same people fighting, you know, rematching and fighting for the belt or for contendership. So, I mean, the good thing is that like the division can really shuffle a little with her removing herself. So we got some fresh fights that we can see and new, like, you know, fight of the nights and legendary fights to see. Strawweight division, man. I mean, that's something, you know, women's strawweight division as far as like, with everything else going on now, when you look at what happened with the 135, and then, you know, we got to wait on this Peña Nunes thing to happen, and Dana White's talking like Nunes is ready to retire anyway. So that's like for the women's UFC divisions, strawweight's never been boring. I feel like strawweight division's always fun and always the one to keep an eye on.
Yeah, it's been the one constant since it came in, short of that, couple year Rousey, you know, run where she sold a trillion pay-per-views and headline events and stuff. But I mean, overall, very, very good event. You know, one other thing of note, Jake Matthews looked outstanding. Total change of
pretty much all the KOs.
I mean, looked great. So that wraps up you know, talk about UFC 275. I did mention BKFC real quick, man. They're doing a hell of a job on the free agent market. You know, it's Greg Hardy, but when you're signing, you know, you're bringing in names. You got Greg Hardy, John Dodson. We haven't talked about MVP signing for a looks like a one-off fight against.
Well, we mentioned it. Oh no, we it was after the fact.
It was the day after we talked to Matt last week. So I mean, you got Perry versus MVP in London. On the same night of a PFL in London. I mean, the gamesmanship is obviously being played there a little bit by Scott Coker to lend a star to the biggest star probably in London to headline.
Man, not for nothing, Scott Coker is the only promoter out there, and people like to shit on Bellator and Scott Coker. He's the only promoter out there though that seems to be letting fighters kind of do what they want to do, and then fans do, you know, get what they want to see, you know, that I think it's great. I mean, how that matchup goes, I don't know if we talked about it. I know I chimed in on a tweet or an Instagram post or something with Perry MVP, but I mean, you know, MVP he breaks people's skulls, and Perry kind of leads with his head. You know, it's not gonna be pretty.
Yeah, no, I mean, we'll talk about that more when it comes.
But when we're near it, yeah,
tend to be the same way. But I mean, did you talk MVP? I mean, just this past Friday, Alan Belcher knocks out Frank Tate in the main event, becomes the number one contender. I mean, the dude just looks like an absolute killer. I mean, when I think of Alan Belcher, I think of like BJJ. I mean, I know that he was kind of an all around fighter. Maybe it's because I met him at the World Championships, the BJJ World Championships one year. But for some reason, I always think of him as kind of the submission, more of a submission based. You know, I never thought of him as this big KO animal. And I mean, what he's doing in BKFC is crazy, but it's just, you know, they're making a name for themselves, signing these guys. Yeah. I don't know where it's going to go. I don't know. I don't know if it's going to end well.
That's going to get some eyeballs. I mean, if BKFC,
it's going to get some eyeballs. Yeah. And if they're willing to work with other organizations to have guys kind of handed featured around
fights. Yeah.
Good Lord, man. A triune combination of, you know, Bellator, Ryzen and BKFC working together. There's some potential there. I mean, you know,
oh my God,
a BKFC fight on New Year's Eve and in Risen with, you know, there's so much possibilities for just the chaos that we deserve as MMA fans. You know, we deserve what the UFC gives us, because that's what we consider the top shelf. But if there's not circus act MMA going on in this world, then we're not enjoying the sport to the fullest. But let me just say that if you're going to enjoy it to the fullest,
I mean, you want it to be like like some weird Japanese anime, like tournament fight, like all kinds of craziness. You know, that's again, that's why I like, remember the Dynamite event Scott Coker did back, like not that long, so long ago. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's probably a long time ago now, but it feels like yesterday to me that he did a couple of those. And I remember you and I were all nuts for them. And like the average MMA fan, what is this? What are you doing? Nobody wants to see kickboxing. And meanwhile, he's got a convertible cage that rises from, you know, it works in pro wrestling. Everyone goes crazy. But for some reason, I don't get it.
I saw it come down in front of me a couple times. It was, I mean, to be fair, the Bellator kickboxing, it wasn't. Unless you were into the kickboxing scene and you knew the Joanna Bars and the, you know, the Daniels, and some of those guys, then.
But he fights in Bellator now.
He does now, but back then, like it was still kind of new. Unless you followed Glory or Lion Fight at that time, you really didn't know who a lot of these kickboxers were. So, and some of the kickboxing matchups were a little bit odd. So, I mean, I can understand a little bit of it, but now. Now, when you have a possible partnership with, you know, let's hope Ryzen gets through there, any issues that might be going on there.
I mean, listen, if Showtime is willing to feature Jake Paul's shit as a pay-per-view, they got to be willing to do some craziness that Scott Coker wants to do. Like you got to come on. If you're going to put Jake Paul and announce events and put marketing behind him versus someone that we don't know who that is yet, but it's for Madison Square Garden, it's going to be on Showtime in August. Like, you got to be willing to do, if you want to get crazy, let's get crazy. Scott Coker knows how to get crazy. You know?
Yeah, so. And you know, my thing is, like, if guys want to crisscross between the two, let's hope that BKFC and Bellator is open to that. I mean, I don't hate the idea of Joey Beltran getting another fight in Bellator. He's fought there before. Yeah. You know, if some of these guys want to get fights, like, it opens up the door for some, you know, for some growth between both of the organizations. So, well, props to that. But
yeah, I mean, speaking of opening up the door, I mean, we've been talking about Bellator enough. We might as well look at Bellator 282. I'll be on site covering that event. It'll be my first time covering boots on the ground since this COVID mess kicked off. I've already got an interview for the podcast. Spoke with Aaron Jeffrey. If you want to check out his interview, links on the bottom of the description here on the YouTube channel, and it'll be on the full episode on when we upload to Spotify and Anchor and everywhere the audio version of the podcast is played. But I should just queue up his he's not the first fight on the card, but as we were prepping for the show, this was again, Bellator likes to get crazy. Check out, this is, if you go to Bellator's website where we get our look at the fight cards and stuff on the video version of the podcast, you can see this. If you know Aaron Jeffrey and you know his reputation, he's known, outside of being a great fighter, he's known for something else. So this is how Bellator has him featured on their website.
For their silhouette.
I thought that was hilarious. And I thought it was like a meme online or something. Here we are. When you started laughing, I was like, holy shit. This is him.
So basically they have the blank-faced gray silhouette of a man with a mullet and a mustache. It's freaking outstanding. That's props to Bellator for having a little bit of fun with that and doing that. But yeah, you talked to Aaron. I haven't had a chance to listen to it yet. I'll listen to it with everybody else. But
I'll tell you this, man. I mean, you know, I spoke to him a few times when he was fighting for CFFC middleweight title, won it, defended it. In between, you know, while he was doing his contender series, this is his debut at Bellator. I mean, the kid has been grinding. If you talk about someone that sacrificed a lot to put the eye on the prize, I mean, from getting his wallet stolen, almost stranded in land that's not close to his home, everything he did just to keep active and fighting through all, because he lives in Canada. If you remember, Canada wasn't letting people in and out that easy to do much. You know, the last couple of years with COVID happening, and he managed to buckle down and I mean, his gym closed, had to find a new gym, got some training in at Sanford MMA. I mean, that's part of what we talked about in the interview. And now that things are, like you said, Matt, a little bit better, you could literally, I mean, the interviews are on this YouTube channel too, if you want to look back at them, but you can see that just his energy and the vibe that he has when talking. It's not someone talking about, I just like, they're grinding to the point that they're nervous about what may or may not happen. This is someone, great energy, happy. I mean, you know, he's fighting Fabio Aguilar, which is, I have a note in my interview. I keep saying Aguilar. I'm Mexican, so that's more common for me. And I kept saying that by accident, so I wanted to correct myself here. But it's connected to this podcast episode, so just, you know, some housekeeping for there. But yeah. It's a great, great card. I mean, he's fighting on the prelims, so if you don't have Showtime, you can watch it on YouTube for sure.
Prelims are loaded. Mm-hmm. Alejandra Lara.
Katsingano.
I, for the life of me, don't. I can't figure out how Anatoly Tokov at 30-3 at this point is still a prelim fighter. I don't. Maybe he's you know, I think a. Yeah, I don't know who's got accurate records. We need to knock Bellator. They got him at 30-2. Tapology has him as 30-3. So who knows? But with that recent UFC fighter who changed his record about 17 times.
Yeah.
Maybe I shouldn't be blaming anybody for crazy records. So I don't, you know, he's fighting Abdullah, who's 10-5. You know, it's hard not to see Tokov moving on and getting that 31st victory. Title shot's got to be around the corner. I would have thought that he would almost been the co-main event maybe not the co-main event, but at least in the main card, because you could always advertise him as fighting the winner of the main.
Well, you
got to
remember they're behind. I mean, people are knocking them for being on Showtime, which is kind of like a kind of a paywall to watch the main card. So I see this as smart.
You might be right. Now that you say that, there might be more eyes actually on YouTube than on.
Yeah, but then like you're watching YouTube and you're like, man, this is, you know. And I've always loved Bellator prelims, like even before, you know, when they were on Spike and everything, I always just thought they were always like, you know, crazy finishes. So much happens. The energy is always great. And now you look at all these fighters that are well-known. Saba Hamasi's, but like a Bellator, you mentioned Alejandro Lara, Cody Law, James Gonzalez. And where's the one that Mandel Nall and Bryce Logan.
The opening bout on the card is 14-2 against 10-0.
Brent Primus, former lightweight champ on the prelims. So don't sleep on these prelims. They're fun.
Oh no, definitely not sleeping on the prelims. I mean, you could almost argue that the prelims are better than. I mean, it's equal to the main card. While the main card is carried by some tournament fights, some of those other fights could easily be on here. But yeah, jumping to the main card. And again, this event is on July 24th or June 24th. We're doing an early review because Ed will most likely be on the road next Wednesday for media day. And we didn't want to pass up at least letting the fans know that.
Yeah, I'll be typing away. I might not make the scheduled podcast time.
So Brendan Ward comes back, won his return fight. He's back on the main card. And then the double Megomedov, 18-2.
Cassius Bilicane,
Enrique Barzola in one of the first quarterfinal of the Grand Prix.
And this, if you haven't heard, I mean, Danny Sabatello called for this fight when he won over in Hawaii. So, I mean, well, not called for it, but it was for the, what was that, what they call it? To get into the Grand Prix?
Just a qualifying bout or?
Something like that. He won his against, didn't he fight Jordan Lugo to win that? I feel like that's who he beat to get this slot.
Yeah, that's who he beat.
And, I mean, dominant decision. And he said, Leandro Higos was, if you're looking at their records and experience, you might think that he might be shooting above his, people, fans on the Bellator website, 53% think he's going to win. I don't know if it's because of all the F-bombs he drops and, you know, he's obviously fun for social media and marketing and stuff like that. You know, I don't really watch MMA Hour, but I know Helwani talked to him today. I don't know if he talked to Higo too, but I mean, I saw Sabatello was trending at the time he made his appearance. So the guy's definitely good for the brand and the sport.
I
mean,
what I've seen about him, I think he wins this fight. Mm. I think he's going to wrestle Higo down and use the wrestle. I mean, he's shown kind of a level of wrestling that I haven't, you know, nobody against him so far that I can recall has been able to really hang with. So I think until, you know, that's not the case, I kind of lean towards him. Maybe I'm underestimating Higo a little bit, but I kind of feel like he's a little bit of the gatekeeper to the division in a sense. And I think Sabatello definitely has the tools to pick up the win there. And then I never pick against the double Megomed. So, you know, even though he did lose his last fight to Stotts, 18-2 is nothing to joke about. And when you come from the circuit where he fought to get here,
and here's an interesting note that just because of, I mean, there's a total of 3 middleweight fights on the card, including this world title fight with Musasi and Eblen. That's one of the things, you know, for, again, if you haven't followed Aaron Jeffrey's career, we talk about it in the interview that's coming up, but you know, I'm wondering, he's a CFFC middleweight champ before he, you know, did his contender series stuff and got signed here. So it's almost like they're kind of laying planting the seeds to get him ranked and, you know, get him obviously to main event for a title shot if he keeps having the same success that he had at CFFC. So it's definitely, if Bellator 282 is not on your radar, it should be, because I mean, that is the only event they're doing this month, I think.
Yeah, then, you know, and when you got a main event with Gegard Mousasi, I mean, you're talking, we've said it multiple times on this show, he continues to add to his legacy, whether UFC, not UFC, you know, dream, everything. The man is an absolute beast, so... I picked against him last time when he fought Vanderfort. I thought Vanderfort would use his wrestling. Mm-hmm. I just kind of thought maybe it was the time, and I was brutally wrong, happily brutally wrong, because Musasi's one of the people that keeps me coming back to the TV to watch the fights. So I mean, this is a tough fight. Eblen's undefeated. Which is always a thing, but so was Vanderfort. So I think Musashi puts another crooked number on another record and continues to work his way up the ladder of all-time greats. And if Tokov is able to get a win, I think Musashi Tokov, is an interesting fight. And you got guys like you said, Jeffrey, and some of these up-and-coming dudes moving up into the thing. You know,
that's interesting you say that. I mean, let's check the rankings now that you say that. We got the website up anyway. Might as well check the current rankings for middleweight. Yeah. I mean.
Yeah, so he fights Eblen next weekend. He's beaten Vanderfort. He's beat Salter. Fabian Edwards is number three, and then or tied for three with Salter, and then Tokoff's right there. I figure with Tokoff with a win, he probably moves to a spot, but he's kind of, you know, it's either Edwards or Tokoff, and you know, it's hard. You know, 30-2 always looks better than 10-2. No matter who the fighter is, when those records are next to each other in the rankings, and when you start reading, you know, with Musashi gets a win, what is he? It'd be win number 50. You start reading off a guy with 50 wins fighting a guy with 30 plus wins. You start getting some serious, especially with the small amount of losses between the two of them combined. You start getting into some high level fights. So I don't know. I look forward to it. I look forward to you being able to get out there.
It's my first event, boots on the ground, that's not through a Zoom link or something, and I'm really looking forward to it, especially getting out of Jersey is always nice
too. Yep. Hopefully you get to bug Nolan King and some of the other guys who might be on the run out
there. Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing some familiar faces.
There you go, exactly. Get back on Media Row. So I think that kind of wraps us up. So fans can check us out at Combat Hour on Twitter, Coast to Coast Combat Hour on Instagram. Follow me, Matthew Hawkins, at MMAHawk21 on Twitter and Instagram. Follow Edit Carbazol on Twitter, Carb Beersol on Instagram, Old Head Carb on Twitch. Stay tuned on Audio Ed for the Aaron Jeffrey interview.
Yeah, the videos, there's a link on the bottom, but the audio version, this will jump right into the... If you listen to this on Spotify or Anchor or anything, it'll jump right into, you'll hear their cut and you'll hear the jump right into the audio for me and Aaron Jeffrey talking about his Bellator 282 debut.
There you go. And as always, fans can check us out at allaccessmma.com for our video podcast and your MMA inquiries and news and everything else. So thanks everybody for listening. Have a good rest of the week. Ed, we'll talk, and fans will likely be back for Fight Week, UFC International Fight Week 2022.
Oh, yeah. In 2 another weeks. Pay-per-view week, yeah.
There you go. Good night, everybody, and thanks for listening.
All right, this is Carbajal speaking with Aaron Jeffrey, who's making his Bellator debut in a little under 2 weeks, June 24th at Bellator 282. This is for the Coast to Coast Combat Hour, brought to you by All Access MMA. Aaron, man, I mean, I just following your journey, and you know, we're about to get right there with your Bellator debut. I mean, how does it feel? Is there like a sense of accomplishment along with jitters for new challenges? Like where are you at right now?
It's hard to say, man. People keep asking me this, and I think as fighters, we don't stop to appreciate what's happening, you know. So I don't know. I kind of been just grinding and treating it as any other fight. Maybe when I got the contract, it was a bit more of the accomplishment then. But like right now, there's no time to like sit and think about it. Like I just got to get to work and do what I got to do, you know?
Yeah. Speaking of getting to work, I mean, the last time I talked to you, you told me about the ups and downs of traveling between going to Canada, getting to your fights for your CFFC contender series, all that stuff. I hope it's easier for you to actually get to work now than it was compared to back then, right?
For sure, man. Yeah, things have eased up for sure. No issues really anymore getting anywhere.
And it looks like I know you had issues with training when stuff had places closed due to COVID, and you had to switch. And now I see you put up a lot of stuff. You're training. You did some training at Sanford. So, like, is that the basis of where you do the camp for this fight, or how are you staying ready?
I was probably like half and half between there and home. So I went down there right after my last fight, which was the end of January. So I was at Sanford for the month of February. Then I was home for a month. Mm-hmm. And then I went back down there again for another month. And now I've been home again for about a month again. So pretty much split it half and half.
What's the feedback you've been getting with us? Look, as we near Bellator 282, you know, I almost thought you were going to cut your hair or do something different, but it looks like you're keeping everything. You're bringing all that energy to Connecticut.
Yeah, for sure. I can't cut the hair now, man. It's it'd be career suicide to cut it now.
you're facing Fabio Aguilar.
Yep.
I mean, he looks, I know you guys are both fighting at middleweight, but he looks like a pretty beefy middleweight based on what I've seen of him. Mm-hmm. And he's got some, he's already fought a Bellator a couple times before. So, I mean, what's your, like, I mean, I'm not going to ask you your game plan, but I mean, what's your take on fighting Aguilar?
Yeah, he's good for sure. Big, strong dude. Very solid record. Like, he's 18-2. It's pretty crazy. I think a lot of his fights have been in Brazil. Like, some of the fights don't even show like how he won or anything. Like, probably some kind of old school promotions down there. yeah, he's already had a couple fights in Bellator. He's good, man. He's pretty solid. He's well rounded. I actually think he fights a little bit like me from what I've seen. He kind of like pressures forward, grinds guys on the fence, looks to wrestle a bit. I think I can just do it a little bit better than him.
Is it hard to find footage on him? I haven't really looked. I mean, I've seen enough of your fights, and I know, like you mentioned, the grinding style. Like, is there anything? I mean, again, not to give away your game plan, but is there anything that he does that surprises you?
Not really, man. Again, he's pretty good everywhere. He's kind of looks like a meat and potatoes kind of guy. He doesn't like do anything super fancy, nothing tricky or anything from what I've seen. Just kind of a hard nosed guy. He's gonna pressure forward and kind of make it a scrap.
And is it gonna be folks from Sanford cornering you for this, or are you gonna mix it up? Or
no, it's my coaches from back home. So I came back home for this last month to kind of put the finishing touches on camp with my coaches here and kind of clean things up. And they're the ones who'll be in my corner.
It looks hot. I mean, they're in Florida. I feel like, do you find yourself losing a lot more water weight when you're training down there? Like, are you lighter down there?
Yes. The first time I went down, because that was in February and it was still like freezing cold in Canada. but we're hitting our summertime, so now it's warm here too. Like, I don't know what it is in Fahrenheit, but we're getting close to like 30 Celsius and it's super humid and the gym's like warm and sticky. So it's probably just about the same here as it is down in Florida right now.
The main event of the card that you're on, the middleweight title, obviously, yep. And it seems like the Bellator matchmakers know what they're doing by bringing you in, you know, being that in the region, you have a fan base in the Northeast because of your time with CFFC and winning the title there. I'm wondering, do you think in their minds, I mean, obviously you're worried about the man you're fighting, but do you think they're just trying to lay the seeds of new challengers for the division?
Maybe, man. I hope so. Like, we'll see what happens after this. But yeah, I think from the sounds of it, they kind of want to start giving me some tough fights pretty soon.
I mean, your fights when I first looked at the card, they didn't have many fights announced, but yours was one of the first ones they announced. And now they added a lot more. A lot of folks are going to get to see you too, especially if they haven't watched your previous fights. I mean, it's going to air on the prelims. I think you're still on the prelims, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But those are air on YouTube, which I know a lot of Bellator fans have easier access watching because than the main card broadcast on Showtime. So, I mean, I know you're used to it and you already have a pretty big following, but is there any stage fright being that it's a new platform?
Not really, man. The weeks out from the fight, you think about it a bit more, but I mean, once you're in the back and you're warming up and making the walk, like it just feels like a fight. Like, I've done contender series twice. I kind of bounced around to a bunch of different shows, right? So I'm used to like being on a new stage. Obviously this is bigger. But no, I think once you're there, it's all kind of the same.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you want to give away any surprises, especially with the new gym that you built, but I mean, is there anything as far as like what folks are used to seeing? I mean, is it going to be you grinding out your opponent again, or more butt drags, less butt drags? what should we expect to see on June 24th?
I don't know, man. Like, it's a fight. Anything can happen, right? I want to get my hand raised. I've been working my ass off. This is the best I've ever felt. I know it's like a very stereotypical thing for fighters to say, like, this is the best I've ever felt, but I really think it is. Usually at this point in camp, I'm feeling like burnt out and drained, and I feel sharp physically and mentally. So I'm very excited for this.
Well, I mean, it's a well-earned, where you're at in your career. I mean, only 29 years old. There's so much time ahead of you for you to do so much, and I'm looking for you to. I'm hoping for you to make waves over there in Bellator, man, because I mean, after talking to you before and after during everything, this is it's probably the fight I'm looking most forward to outside of the main event is your fight, because it's your debut there. It's really good to see, and I can actually the energy I'm getting from you now just talking to you, it's just different than, because you could tell you were really, you know, I mention your name often, especially on the podcast and when I talk to other media members, you're the guy that comes up when I talk about fighters that have their eye on the prize and are looking to do something, and it's just great to watch your journey, and I'm looking forward to your debut over there.
Thank you, man. Thank you.
So anyway, I'll let you get back to it. I'm waiting on Bellator to let me know if I'm getting credentialed for that event, so I might see you there either way. But again, thank you for the time.
You're from that area?
I'm in New Jersey, yeah.
So you're gonna drive down then? Is that what you'd be doing?
I drove my first time when I went there to cover an event, and I actually got there late, so I take the train now.
Okay.
Because I can work on the train and get my write ups and stuff done, and then
Yeah, are you going to be there either way then, if you're credentialed or not? Are you coming to the event?
I think yeah, for sure. I mean, I've never been there in June. I've always gone like in the fall and the spring.
Mm-hmm.
And then I guess with Bellator, the way they, you know, since COVID changed up everybody's schedule, they've been there a couple times in last June, and this is their first time there this year. So it'll be my first time back on the ground.
Nice. Well, yeah, hit me up if you're there, man. We'll meet up and we'll chat.
Oh, for sure, man. I think they're going to do a media day or something. I don't know how they handle it now, but I think, like you said, things are looser, that which is one of the reasons I'm able to get there. For sure. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it, man. It's going to be the energy coming off of you is good, and I think it's going to be a great fight.
Thanks, man. Me too.
All right, cool. Well, thanks again. Did you want to plug any of your sponsors and stuff before we close out the interview?
Yeah, everyone just check me out everywhere on social media at AAJMMA.
All right, cool. All right, Aaron Jeffrey, everybody. Thank you.
Thanks, man.